feel like it's all going to crash down and crush me. Fear creeps down my spine when the doors ahead swing open, metal and glass easing on giant hinges. The first breath of cold wind hits me head-on, making my eyes water. The winter sun shines bright on the gleaming square, blinding me for a second. I blink rapidly, trying to make my eyes adjust. I can't afford to miss a second of this. The outside world comes into focus steadily. Snow lies deep on the rooftops of the palace and the surrounding structures of Caesar Square. Soldiers line either side of the steps leading down from the palace, immaculate in their neat rows. The Arvins lead me through the double row of soldiers, past their guns and uniforms and unblinking eyes. I turn to look over my shoulder as I walk, stealing a glance at the opulent pale hulk of Whitefire Palace. Silhouettes prowl the roof. Officers in black uniforms, soldiers in clouded gray. Even from here, their rifles are clearly visible, silhouetted against a cold blue sky, and those are just the guards I can see. There must be more patrolling the walls, manning the gates, concealed and ready to defend this wretched place. Hundreds, probably. Kept for their loyalty and lethal ability. We cross the square alone. For no one. For nothing. What is this? I note the buildings we pass. The Royal Court, a circular building with smooth marble walls, spiraled columns, and a crystal dome, has gone unused since Maven's coronation. It is a symbol of power, a massive hall large enough to seat the assembled high houses and their retainers, as well as important members of the Silver Citizenry. I've never been inside. I hope I never am. The Judiciary Courts, where silver law is made and enacted with brutal efficiency, branch out from the domed structure. Next to their arches and crystal trappings, the Treasury Hall looks dull. Slab walls, more marble, and I have to wonder how many quarries this place sucked dry. No windows, sitting like a block of stone among sculptures. The wealth of Norta is somewhere in there, more defended than the king, locked in vaults drilled deep into the bedrock below us. "This way," Clover growls, pulling me toward the treasury. "Why?" I ask. Again, no one answers. My heartbeat quickens, hammering against my ribcage, and I struggle to keep my breathing even. Each cold gasp feels like the tick of a clock, steadily counting down the moments before I'm swallowed up. The doors are thick, thicker than the ones I remember from Koros prison. They open wide as a yawning mouth, flanked by guards in liveried purple. The treasury has no grand entrance hall, in sharp contrast to every other silver structure I've ever seen. It's just a long, white corridor, curving and sloping downward in a steady spiral. Guards stand at attention every 10 yards or so, flush against pure white stone. Where the vaults might be, or where I'm going, I can't say. After exactly 600 steps, we stop in front of a guard. Without a word, he steps forward and to the side, putting his fingers to the wall behind him. He pushes and the marble glides backward a foot, revealing the silhouette of a door. It slides easily at his touch, widening to create a 3-foot gap in the stone. The soldier doesn't strain at all. "Strong arm," I note. The stone is thick and heavy. My fear triples, and I swallow hard, feeling my hands start to sweat in my gloves. Maven is finally putting me in a real cell. Kitten and Clover shove me, trying to take me off guard. But I plant my feet, locking every joint against them. "No!" I shout, driving a shoulder back into one of them. Kitten grunts but doesn't stop, continuing to push while Clover takes me around the middle, lifting me clean off the floor. "You can't put me down here!" I don't know what card to play, what mask to put on. Do I cry? Do I beg? Do I act like the rebel queen they think I am? Which one will save me? Fear overrules my senses. I gasp like a girl drowning. "Please, I can't. I can't." I kick at open air, trying to topple Clover, but she's stronger than I expect. Egg takes my legs, cleanly ignoring my heel as it cracks into his jaw. They carry me like a piece of furniture, without thought or attention. Twisting, I manage to catch sight of the treasury guard as the door slides back into place. He hums to himself, nonchalant. Another day on the job for him. I force myself to look forward at whatever fate awaits me in these white depths. This vault is empty. Its walkway corkscrews like the corridor, albeit in tighter circles. Nothing marks the walls. No distinguishing features, no seams, not even guards. Just lights overhead and stone all around. Please. My voice echoes in the silence, alone with the sound of my racing heartbeat. I stare up at the ceiling, willing this all to be a dream. When they drop me, I gasp, the wind knocked from my lungs. Still, I roll to my feet as quickly as I can. As I stand, fists clenched, teeth bared, I'm ready to fight and willing to lose. I won't be abandoned here without taking someone's teeth. The Arvens stand back, side by side, unamused, uninterested. Their focus is beyond me, behind me. I whirl to find myself staring, not at another blank wall, but at a winding platform. Newly built, joining with other corridors or vaults or secret passages. It overlooks tracks. Before my brain can attempt to connect the dots, before even the briefest whisper of excitement can ripple in my mind, Maven speaks and smashes my hope to pieces. Don't get ahead of yourself. His voice echoes from my left, farther down the platform. He stands there, waiting, a guard of sentinels around him, along with Evangeline and Ptolemus. All of them wear coats like mine, with ample fur to keep them warm. Both Samos' children are resplendent in black sable. Maven steps toward me, grinning with the confidence of a wolf. The Scarlet Guard aren't the only ones capable of building trains. The undertrain rattled and sparked and rusted all over, a tin heap threatening to split apart at its welds. Still, I prefer it to this glamorous slug. Your friends gave me the idea, of course, Maven says from his plush seat across from me. He lazes, proud of himself. I see none of his psychic wounds today. They're carefully hidden, either pushed aside or forgotten for the moment. I fight the urge to curl up in my own seat, and I keep both feet firmly planted on the floor. If something goes wrong, I have to be ready to run. As in the palace, I note every inch of Maven's train, looking for any kind of advantage. I find none. No windows, and sentinels and Arvan guards are planted at either end of the long compartment. It's furnished like a salon, with paintings, upholstered chairs and couches, even crystal lights tinkling with the motion of the train. But as with everything silver, I see the cracks. The paint has barely dried. I can smell it. The train is brand new, untested. At the other end of the compartment, Evangeline's eyes dart back and forth, betraying her attempt to seem calm. The train rattles her. I bet she can feel every piece of it moving at high speed. It's a hard sensation to get used to. I never could, always sensing the pulse of machines like the undertrain or the Black Run jet. I used to feel the electric blood. I guess she can feel the metal veins. Her brother sits beside her, glowering at me. He shifts once or twice, nudging her shoulder. Her pained expression relents every time, calmed by his presence. I guess if the new train explodes, they're strong enough to survive the shrapnel. They manage to escape so quickly from the bowl of bones, riding the ancient rails all the way to Neyersee before even I could get there. I figured it wouldn't be so bad to have a little escape route of my own. Maven continues, drumming his fingers on his knee. You never know what new concoction my brother may dream up in his attempt to overthrow me. Best to be prepared. And what are you escaping from right now? I mumble, trying to keep my voice low. He only shrugs and laughs. Don't act so glum, Mare. I'm doing us both a favor. Grinning, he sinks back in his seat. He kicks his feet up, putting them onto the seat beside me. I wrinkle my nose at the action, angling away. One can only tolerate the prison of Whitefire Palace for so long. Prison. I bite back a retort, forcing myself to humor him. You have no idea what a prison is, Maven. Without windows or any kind of bearing, I have no way to know where we may be headed or how far this infernal machine can travel. It certainly feels as fast as the Undertrain, if not faster. I doubt we're heading south to Neyersey, a ruined city now abandoned even by the Scarlet Guard. Maven made such a show of destroying the tunnels after the infiltration of Archeon. He lets me think, watching as I puzzle out the picture around us. He knows I don't have enough pieces to make it whole. Still, he lets me try and doesn't offer any more explanation. The minutes tick by, and I turn my focus to Ptolemus. My hate for him has only grown over the last few months. He killed my brother. He took Shade from this world. He would do the same to everyone I love if given the chance. For once, he's without his scaled armor. It makes him seem smaller, weaker, more vulnerable. I fantasize about cutting his throat and staining Maven's freshly painted walls with silver blood. Something interests you, Ptolemus snarls, meeting my gaze. Let her stare, Evangeline says. She leans back in her seat and tips her head, never breaking eye contact. She can't do much more than that. We'll see, I growl back. In my lap, my fingers twitch. Maven clucks his tongue, chiding. Ladies? Before Evangeline can retort, her focus shifts and she looks away. At the walls, at the floor, at the ceiling. Ptolemus matches her action. They sense something I can't. And then, the train around us starts to slow, its gears and mechanisms screeching against iron tracks. Nearly there, then, Maven says, easing to his feet. He offers me a hand. For a moment I entertain the idea of biting his fingers off. Instead, I put my hand in his, ignoring the crawling sensation under my skin. When I stand, his thumb grazes the raised edge of my manacle beneath my glove, a firm reminder of his hold over me. I can't stand it and pull away, folding my arms over my chest to create a barrier between us. Something darkens in his bright eyes, and he puts up a shield of his own. Maven's train stops so smoothly I barely feel it. The Arvins do, though, and snap to my side, surrounding me with exhausting familiarity. At least I'm not chained up or leashed. Sentinels flank Maven as the Arvins flank me, their flaming robes and black masks foreboding as always. They let Maven set the pace, and he crosses the length of the compartment. Evangeline and Ptolemus follow, forcing me and my guards to take up the back of the strange procession. We follow them through the door into a vestibule connecting one compartment to the next. Another door, another long stretch of opulent furnishings, this time in a dining room. Still no windows. Still no hint as to where we might be. At the next vestibule, a door opens, not ahead, but to the right. The sentinels duck through first, disappearing, then Maven goes, then the rest. We exit onto another platform, illuminated by harsh lights overhead. It's shockingly clean. Another new construction, no doubt, but the air feels damp. Despite the meticulous order of the empty platform, something drips somewhere, echoing around us. I look left and right along the tracks. They fade into blackness on either side. This isn't the end of the line. I shudder to think how much progress Maven has made in only a few months' time. Up we go, ascending a set of stairs. I resign myself to a long climb, remembering how deep the vault entrance was. So I'm surprised when the stairs level off quickly at another door. This one is reinforced steel, a foreboding omen of what might be beyond. A sentinel grasps the bar lock and turns it with a grunt. The groan of a massive mechanism answers. Evangeline and Ptolemus don't lift a finger to help. Like me, they watch with thinly veiled fascination. I don't think they know much more than I do. Strange for a house so closely tied to the king. Daylight streams through as the steel swings back, revealing gray and blue beyond. Dead trees, their branches splayed like veins, reach into a clear winter sky. As we step out from the train bunker, I take a deep breath. Pine. The sharp cleanness of cold air. We're standing in a clearing surrounded by evergreens and naked oaks. The earth beneath me is frozen, hard-packed dirt beneath a few inches of snow. It chills my toes already. I dig in my heels, earning one more second of open forest. The Arvins push me along, making me skid. I don't fight so much as methodically slow them down, all the while whipping my head back and forth. I try to get my bearings. Judging by the sun, now beginning its western descent, north is directly ahead of me. Four military transports, polished to unnatural shine, idle in the path before us. Their engines hum, waiting, the heat of them sending plumes of steam into the air. It's easy to figure which belongs to Maven. The burning crown, red, black, and royal silver, is stamped on the sides of the grandest one. It stands almost 2 feet off the ground, with massive wheels and what must be a reinforced body. Bulletproof, fireproof, deathproof. Everything to protect the boy king. He climbs inside without hesitation, his cape trailing behind. To my relief, the Arvins don't make me follow, and I'm bodily shoved into another transport. Mine is unmarked. As I duck in, straining for one last glimpse of the open sky, I notice Evangeline and Ptolemus approach their own transport. Black and silver, its metal body covered in spikes. Evangeline probably decorated it herself. We lurch forward as Egg shuts the door behind him, locking me into the transport with four Arvin guards. There is a soldier behind the wheel, and a sentinel in the seat next to him. I resign myself to another journey, crammed in with the Arvins. At least the transport has windows. I watch, not wanting to blink, as we speed through an achingly familiar forest. When we reach the river, and the widely paved road running next to it, a longing burns through my chest. That is the Capitol River. My river. We're driving north, on the Royal Road. They could throw me from the transport right now, leave me in the dust with nothing, and I could find my way home. Tears spring to my eyes at the thought. What would I do, to myself or anyone else, for the chance to go back home? But no one is there. No one I care about. They're gone. Protected. Far away. Home is no longer the place we're from. Home is safe with them. I hope. I jump as other transports join our convoy. Military grade, their bodies marked by the black sword of the army. I count almost a dozen in sight, and more stretching into the distance behind us. Many have silver soldiers visible, either leaning off the side or perched on top in special seats and harnesses. All of them are on alert, ready to act. The Arvins don't look surprised by the new additions. They knew they were coming. The Royal Road winds through towns on the riverbank. Red towns. We're too far south for us to pass through the stilts yet, but that doesn't dampen my excitement. Brick mills come into view first, jutting out into the shallows of the river. We speed right for them, entering the outskirts of a thriving mill town. As much as I want to see more, I hope we don't stop. I hope Maven passes right through this place without disruption. I mostly get my wish. The convoy slows but never stops, rolling through the heart of the town in all its glittering menace. Crowds line the street, waving us on. They cheer for the king, shouting his name, straining to see and be seen. Red merchants to mill workers, the old and young, hundreds of them pressing forward to get a better look. I expect to see security officers pushing them on, forcing such a raucous welcome. I lean back against my seat, willing myself not to be seen. They're already forced to watch me sit by Maven's side. I don't want to add more fuel to that manipulative fire. To my relief, no one puts me on display. I merely sit and stare at my hands in my lap, hoping for the town to pass by as quickly as possible. In the palace, seeing what I see of Maven, knowing what I do about him, it's easy to forget he has most of the country in his pocket. His grand efforts to turn the tide of opinion against the Scarlet Guard and his enemies seem to be working. These people believe what he says, or perhaps have no opportunity to fight. I don't know which one is worse. When the town recedes behind us, the cheers still echo in my head. All this for Maven, for the next step in whatever plan he has put in motion. We must be beyond Newtown. That much is clear. There's no pollution in sight. There aren't any estates either. I remember passing River Row on my first journey south, back when I was pretending to be Marina. We sailed downriver from the Hall of the Sun all the way to Archeon, passing villages, towns, and the luxurious stretch of bank where many high houses kept their family mansions. I try to remember the maps Julian used to show me. Instead, I only give myself a headache. The sun dips lower as the convoy turns off after the third cheering town, moving in practiced formation onto a connecting roadway, heading west. I try to swallow the dip of sadness rising inside. North pulls at me, beckoning even though I cannot follow. The places I know stretch farther and farther away. I try to keep the compass in my head. West is the Iron Road, the way to the Westlakes, the Lakelands, the Choke. West is war and ruin. Egg and Trio don't let me move much, so I have to crane my neck to see. I bite my lip as we pass through a set of gates, trying to spot a sign or a symbol. There isn't anything. Just bars of wrought iron beneath shockingly green vines of flowering ivy. Well out of season. The estate is palatial. At the far end of a road lined by immaculate hedges, we spit out into a wide square of stone, with the estate house occupying one side. Our convoy circles in front of it, stopping with the transports splayed out in an arced row. No crowds here, but guards are already waiting outside. The Arvins move quickly and I'm ushered from the transport. I glare up at the charming red brick and white trim. Rows of polished windows hung with blooming flower boxes, fluted columns, florid balconies, and the largest tree I've ever seen, bursting from the middle of the mansion. Its branches arc over the pointed roof, growing in conjunction with the structure. Not a twig or leaf out of place, perfectly sculpted like a piece of living art. Magnolia, I think, judging by the white flowers and the perfumed smell. For a moment, I forget it's winter. Welcome, Your Majesty. The voice isn't one I recognize. Another girl, my age, but tall, lean, pale as the snow that should be here, steps down from one of the many transports that joined ours. Her attention is on Maven, now clambering out of his own transport, and she glides by me to curtsy in front of him. I know her at a glance. Hirin Well. She competed in Queen's Trial long ago, drawing mighty trees out of earth while her house cheered her on. Like so many, she hoped to become a royal bride, chosen to marry Cal. Now she stands at Maven's command, eyes downcast, waiting for his order. She pulls her green and gold coat tighter around herself, a defense against the cold and Maven's stare. Hers is one of the few houses I knew before I was forced into the Silver World. Her father governs the region I was born in. I used to watch his ship pass by on the river and wave at its green flags with other stupid children. Maven takes his time, needlessly donning his gloves for the short walk between his transport and the mansion. As he moves, the simple crown nestled in his black curls captures the waning sunlight, winking red and gold. "Charming place, Hirin," he says, making idle small talk. It sounds sinister, coming from him. A threat.
"Thank you, Your Majesty. All is well in order for your arrival."
As I maneuvered closer, Hirin spares a single glance for me, her only acknowledgement of my existence. She has bird-like features, but on her angular figure they look elegant, refined, and sharply beautiful. I expect her eyes to be green, like everything else about her family and ability. Instead, they are a vibrant deep blue, set off by porcelain skin and auburn hair. The rest of the transports empty their passengers, More colors, more houses, more guards and soldiers. I spot Samson among them, looking foolish in leather and fur-dyed blue. The color and the cold make him paler than ever, a blonde icicle of bloodlust. The others give him a wide berth as he prowls to Maven's side. I count a few dozen courtiers at a glance, enough to make me wonder if even Governor Wells' mansion can hold us all. Maven acknowledges Samson with a nod of his head before he sets off at a brisk pace, trotting toward the ornate stairs leading up from the square. Hiran follows at his heels, as do the sentinels in their usual flock. Everyone else follows, pulled along by an invisible tether. A man who can only be the governor rushes from oak and gold doors, bowing as he walks. He seems bland in comparison to his home, unremarkable with his weak chin, dirty blonde hair, and a body neither fat nor thin. His clothes make up for it, and then some. He wears boots, butter-soft leather pants, and a jacket worked in ornate brocade, set with flashing emeralds at the collar and hems. They are nothing compared to the ancient medallion around his neck. It bounces against his chest as he walks, a jeweled emblem of the tree guarding his home.
"Your Majesty, I can't tell you how pleased we are to host you,"
he blusters, bowing one last time. Maven purses his lips into a thin smile, amused by the display.
"It's such an honor to be the first destination on your coronation tour."
Disgust curls in my stomach. I'm seized by the image of me parading through the country, a few steps behind Maven, always at his beck and call. On screen, in front of cameras, it feels degrading. But in person? Before crowds of people like the ones in the town? I may not survive it. Somehow, I think I would prefer the prison of Whitefire. Maven clasps hands with the governor, his smile spreading into something that could pass for genuine. He's good at the act. I'll give him that.
"Of course, Cyrus. I could think of no better place to start. Hiran speaks so highly of you," he adds, waving her to his side.
She steps quickly, eyes flashing to her father. A look of relief passes between them. Like everything Maven does, her presence is a careful manipulation and a message.
"Shall we?"
Maven gestures to the mansion. He sets off, making the rest of us keep up. The governor hurries to flank Maven, still trying to at least look like he has some manner of control here. Inside, droves of red servants line the walls in their best uniforms, their shoes polished and eyes on the floor. None look at me, and I keep to myself, musing instead on the governor's mansion. I expected green warden artistry, and I am not disappointed. Flowers of every kind dominate the foyer, blooming from crystal vases, painted on the walls, molded on the ceiling, worked in glass in the chandeliers, or in stone mosaic on the floor. The smell should be overwhelming. Instead, it's intoxicating, calming with every breath. I inhale deeply, allowing myself this one small pleasure. More of Housewell wait to greet the king, falling over themselves to bow or curtsy or compliment Maven on everything from his laws to his shoes. As he suffers them all, Evangeline joins us, having already discarded her furs with some poor servant. I tense as she pauses next to me. All the greenery reflects in her clothing, giving her a sickly hue. With a jolt, I realize her father isn't here. He usually hovers between her and Maven at events like this, quick to step in when her temper threatens to boil over. But he isn't here now. Evangeline says nothing, content to stare at Maven's back. I watch her watch him. Her fist clenches when the governor leans to whisper in Maven's ear. Then he beckons to one of the silvers waiting, a tall, thin woman with jet-black hair, swooping cheekbones, and cool ochre skin. If she's part of Housewell, she doesn't look it. Not a scrap of green on her. Instead, her clothes are gray-blue. The woman bows her head stiffly, careful to keep her eyes on Maven's face. His demeanor changes, his smile widening for an instant. He mutters something back, his head bobbing in excitement. I catch a single word.
"Now," he says, The governor and the woman oblige. They walk away together, sentinels in tow. I glance at the Arvins, wondering if we're meant to go too, but they don't move. Evangeline doesn't either. And, for whatever reason, her shoulders droop and her body relaxes. Some weight has fallen away. "Stop staring at me," she snaps, knocking me from my observations. I drop my head, letting her win this small, insignificant exchange, and I continue to wonder, what does she know? What does she see that I don't? As the Arvins lead me away to whatever my cell for the evening may be, my heart sinks in my chest. I left Julian's books in Whitefire. Nothing will comfort me tonight. 14. Mare. Before my capture, I spent months crisscrossing the country, evading Maven's hunters and recruiting new bloods. I slept on a dirt floor, ate what we could steal, spent all my waking hours either feeling too much or too little, trying my best to stay ahead of all of our demons. I didn't handle the pressure well. I shut down and shut out my friends, my family, everyone close to me, anyone who wanted to help or understand. Of course I regret it. Of course I wish I could go back to the Notch, to Cal and Killorn and Farley and Shade. I would do things differently. I would be different. Sadly, no silver or new blood can change the past. My mistakes cannot be undone, forgotten, or ignored. But I can make amends. I can do something now. I've seen Norda, but as an outlaw, from the shadows. The view from Maven's side, as part of his extensive entourage, is like the difference between night and day. I shiver beneath my coat, hands clasped together for warmth. Beneath the crushing power of the Arvins and my manacles, I'm more susceptible to the temperature. Despite my hatred for him, I find myself inching closer to Maven, if only to take advantage of his constant heat. On his other side, Evangeline does the opposite, keeping her distance. She focuses more on Governor Well than the King, and mutters to him occasionally, her voice low enough not to disturb Maven's speech. "I'm humbled by your welcome, as well as your support for a young and untested king." Maven's voice echoes, magnified by microphones and speakers. He doesn't read from any paper and somehow seems to make eye contact with every person crowding the city square below the balcony. Like everything about the king, even the location is a manipulation. We stand above hundreds, looking down, elevated beyond the reach of mere humans. The assembled people of Arborus, Governor Well's own capital within his domain, stare up, faces raised in a way that makes my skin itch. The reds jostle for a better look. They're easy to pick out, standing in bunches, covered in mismatched layers, their faces flushed red with cold, while the silver citizenry sit in furs. Black-uniformed security officers dot the crowd, vigilant as the sentinels posted on the balcony and neighboring rooftops. "It is my hope that this coronation tour allows me not only a deeper understanding of my kingdom, but a deeper understanding of you, your struggles, your hopes, your fears, because I am certainly afraid." A murmur goes through the crowd below, as well as the assembled party on the balcony. Even Evangeline glances sidelong at Maven, eyes narrowed over the flawless white collar of her fur wrap. "We are a kingdom on the brink, threatening to shatter under the weight of war and terrorism. It is my solemn duty to prevent this from happening and save us from the horrors of whatever anarchy the Scarlet Guard wishes to instill. So many are dead. In Archeon, in Corvium, in Summerton. My own mother and father among them. My own brother corrupted by the insurrectionist forces. But even so, I am not alone. I have you. I have Norta." He sighs slowly, a muscle ticking in his cheek. "And we will stand together against the enemies, seeking to destroy our way of life, red and silver. I pledge my life to eradicating the Scarlet Guard, in any way possible.
The cheers below sound like metal on metal to me. Screeching. A horrific noise. I keep my face still, expression carefully neutral. It serves me as well as any shield.
Every day his speech becomes firmer, his words carefully chosen and wielded like knives. Not once does he say the word rebel or revolution. The Scarlet Guard are always terrorists, always murderers, always enemies to our way of life, whatever that may be. And unlike his parents, he is masterfully careful to not insult Reds. The tour moves through Silver Estates and Red Cities alike. Somehow he seems at home in both, never flinching from the worst his kingdom has to offer. We even visit one of the factory slums, the kind of place I will never forget. I try not to cringe as we pass through the teetering dormitory buildings, or when we step out into the polluted air. Maven alone seems unfazed, smiling for the workers and their tattooed necks. He doesn't cover his mouth like Evangeline, or retch at the smell, like so many others, myself included. He's better at this than I ever expected. He knows, as his parents could not or refused to understand, that seducing Reds to his silver cause is perhaps his best chance of victory. In another Red City, on the steps of a silver mansion, he lays the next brick in a deadly road. 1,000 poor farmers look on, not daring to believe, not daring to hope. Even I don't know what he's doing.
My father's measures were enacted after a deadly attack that left many government officials dead. It was his attempt to punish the Scarlet Guard for their evil, and, to my shame, it only punished you instead.
Before the eyes of so many, he dips his face. It is a stirring sight. A silver king bowing in front of the red masses. I have to remind myself that this is Maven. This is a trick.
As of today, I decree the measures lifted and abolished. They were the mistakes of a well-meaning king, but mistakes all the same.
He glances at me, just for a moment, but the moment is enough for me to know that he cares about my reaction.
The measures. Conscription age lowered to 15. Restrictive curfew. Lethal punishment for any crime. All to turn the red population of Norta against the Scarlet Guard. All gone in an instant, in one beat of a king's black heart. I should feel happy. I should feel proud. He's doing this because of me. Some part of him thinks this will please me. Some part thinks it will keep me safe. But watching the Reds, my own people, cheer for their oppressor only fills me with dread. I look down to find that my hands are shaking. What is he doing? What is he planning? To find out, I must fly as close to the flame as I dare.
He ends his appearances by walking through the crowd, shaking hands with as many Reds as he does Silvers. He cuts through them with ease, sentinels flanking him in diamond formation. Samson Mirandus always has his back. And I wonder how many feel the brush of his mind against their own. He's a better deterrent to a would-be assassin than anything else. Evangeline and I trail behind, both of us with guards. As always, I refuse to smile, to look, to touch anyone. It's safer for them this way. The transports wait for us. Their engines worked to an idle purr. Above, the overcast sky darkens and I smell snow. While our guards close ranks, tightening formation to allow the king to enter his transport, I quicken my pace as best I can. My heart races, and my breath puffs white on the cold air.
Maven, I say aloud, despite the cheering crowd behind us. He hears me and pauses on the step of his transport. He turns with fluid grace, long cape whirling out to show blood-red lining. Unlike the rest of us, he doesn't need to wear fur to keep warm. I draw my coat tighter, if only to give my nervous hands something more to do.
Did you really mean that?
At his own transport, Samson stares, eyes boring into mine. He can't read my mind, not while I wear the manacles. But that doesn't make him useless. I rely on my real confusion to create the mask I want to wear. I have no illusions where Maven is concerned. I know his twisted heart, and that it feels something for me. Something he wants to get rid of but can never part with. When he waves me to his transport, beckoning for me to join him, I expect to hear Evangeline scoff or protest. She does neither, sweeping away to her own transport. In the cold, she doesn't glitter so brightly. She seems almost human. The Arvins do not follow, though they try. Maven stops them with a look. His transport is different from any other I've been in. The driver and front guard are separated from the passengers by a glass window, sealing us in together. The walls and windows are thick, bulletproof. The sentinels don't slide in either, instead climbing directly onto the transport skeleton, taking up defensive positions at every corner. It's unsettling to know there's a sentinel with a gun sitting directly above me, but not as unsettling as the king sitting across from me, staring, waiting. He eyes my hands, watching me rub my frozen fingers together. "Are you cold?" he murmurs. Quickly, I tuck my hands under my legs to warm them up. The transport accelerates forward. "Are you really going to do it? End the measures?"
"You think I would lie?"
I can't help but laugh darkly. In the back of my mind, I wish for a knife. I wonder if he could incinerate me before I slit his throat. "You? Never." He smirks and shrugs, shifting to get more comfortable on the plush seats. I meant what I said. The measures were a mistake. Enacting them did more harm than good. "To Reds or to you?"
"To both, of course. Although I would thank my father if I could. I expect righting his wrongs will win me support among your people."
The cold detachment in his voice is discomforting, to say the least. I know now it comes from memories of his father. Poisoned things, drained of any love or happiness. "I'm afraid your Scarlet Guard won't have many sympathizers left by the time this is done. I'm going to end them without another useless war." "You think giving people crumbs is going to placate them?" I growl, gesturing to the windows with my chin. Farms, barren for the winter, stretch out to the hills. "Oh, lovely. The king has given me back 2 years of my child's life. Doesn't matter that they're still going to be taken away eventually." His smirk only widens.
"You think that?"
"I do. That's how this kingdom is. That's how it's always been."
"We'll see."
Leaning farther, he puts a foot up on the seat next to me. He even removes his crown, spins it between his hands. Bronze and iron flames glint in the low light, reflecting my face in his. Slowly I edge away, crowding myself into the corner. "I suppose I taught you a hard lesson," he says. "You missed so much last time, and now you trust nothing. You're always watching, looking for information you're never going to use. Have you figured out where we're going yet? Or why?" I take a breath. I feel like I'm back in Julian's classroom, being tested on a map. The stakes feel much higher here. We're on the Iron Road now, heading northwest, to Corvium. He has the gall to wink.
"Close."
"We're not?" I blink quickly, trying to think. My brain buzzes through all the pieces I've jealously collected over the days. Shards of news, bits of gossip. "Rakosta? Are you going after Cal?" Maven settles back farther, amused. "So small-minded. Why would I waste time chasing rumors of my exiled brother? I have a war to end and a rebellion to prevent."
"A war to end?"
"You said yourself. The Lakelands will overthrow us if given the chance. I'm not going to let that happen, especially with Piedmont focused elsewhere on their own multitude of troubles. I have to handle these matters myself." Despite the warmth of the transport, due in large part to the Fire King sitting in front of me, I feel a finger of ice trail down my spine. I used to dream of the choke, the place where my father lost his leg, where my brothers almost lost their lives, where so many Reds die, a waste of ash and blood.
You're not a warrior, Maven. You're not a general or a soldier. How can you possibly hope to defeat them when others couldn't? When Father couldn't? When Cal couldn't?
He snaps. Each word sounds like the crack of bone.
You're right. I'm not like them. War is not what I was made for.
Made. He says it with such ease. Maven Kalor is not his own self. He told me as much. He is a construct. A creation of his mother's additions and subtractions. A mechanical, a machine. Soulless and lost. What a horror. To know that someone like this holds our fates in the palm of his quivering hand.
It will be no loss. Not truly.
He drones on to distract us both.
Our military economy will simply turn its attention to the Scarlet Guard. And then, whoever we decide to fear next. Whatever avenue is best for population control.
If not for the manacles, my rage would certainly turn the transport into a heap of electrified scrap. Instead, I jump forward, lunging, hands stretched out to grab him by the collar. My fingers worm beneath the lapels of his jacket, and I seize fabric in both fists. Without thinking, I shove, pushing, smashing him back into his seat. He flinches, a hand's breadth from my face, breathing hard. He's just as surprised as I am. No easy thing. I immediately go numb with shock, unable to move, paralyzed by fear. He stares up at me, eye to eye, lashes dark and long. I'm so close to him I can see his pupils dilate. I wish I could disappear. I wish I were on the other side of the world. Slowly, steadily, his hands find mine. They tighten on my wrists, feeling manacle and bone. Then he pries my fists from his chest. I let him move me, too terrified for anything else. My skin crawls at his touch, even beneath gloves. I attacked him. Maven. The king. One word, one tap on the window, and a sentinel will rip out my spine. Or he could kill me himself. Burn me alive.
Sit back down.
He whispers. Every word sharp, giving me one single chance. Like a scrambling cat, I do as he says, retreating to my corner. He recovers faster than I do and shakes his head with the ghost of a smile. Quickly, he smooths his jacket and brushes back a lock of rumpled hair.
You're a smart girl, Mare.
Don't tell me you never connected those particular dots.
My breath comes hard, as if there's a stone sitting on my chest. I feel heat rise in my cheeks, both out of anger and shame.
They want our coast, our electricity. We want their farmlands, resources.
I stumble over the words I was taught in a ramshackle schoolhouse. The look on Maven's face only becomes more amused.
In Julian's books, the kings disagreed. Two men arguing over a chessboard like spoiled children.
They're the reason for all this, for 100 years of war.
I thought Julian taught you to read between the lines, to see the words left unsaid.
He shakes his head, despairing of me.
I suppose even he could not undo your years of poor education. Another well-used tactic, I might add.
That I knew, that I've always known, and lamented. Reds are kept stupid, kept ignorant. It makes us weaker than we already are. My own parents can't even read. I blink away hot tears of frustration.
You knew all this, I tell myself, trying to calm down. The war is a ruse, a cover to keep Reds under control. One conflict may end, but another will always begin.
It twists my insides to realize how rigged the game has been, for everyone, for so very long.
Stupid people are easier to control. Why do you think my mother kept my father around for so long? He was a drunk, a heartbroken imbecile, blind to so much, content to keep things as they were. Easy to control, easy to use. A person to manipulate and blame.
Furious, I swipe at my face, trying to hide any evidence of my emotions. Maven watches anyway, his expression softening a little, as if that helps anything. So, what are two Silver Kingdoms going to do once they stop throwing reds at each other? I hiss. Start marching us off cliffs at random? Pull names out of a lottery? He rests a hand on his chin. I can't believe Cal never told you any of this. Although, he wasn't really jumping at the opportunity to change things. Not even for you. Probably didn't think you could handle it, or, well, perhaps he didn't think you would understand it. My fist slams against the bulletproof glass of the window. It smarts instantly, and I bury myself in the pain, using it to keep any thoughts of Cal at bay. I can't let myself fall into that drowning spiral, even if it's true. Even though Cal was once willing to uphold these horrors. Don't! I snap at him. Don't! I'm not a fool, little lightning girl. His snarl matches my own. If you're going to play in my head, I'm going to play in yours. It's what we're good at. I was cold before, but now the heat of his anger threatens to consume me. Feeling sick, I press my cheek against the cool glass of the window and shut my eyes. Don't compare me to you. We're not the same. People like us, he scoffs. We lie to everyone. Especially ourselves. I want to punch the window again. Instead, I tuck my fists tight under my arms, trying to make myself smaller. Maybe I'll just shrink away and disappear. With every breath, I regret getting into his transport more and more. You'll never get the Lakelands to agree, I say. I hear him laugh deep in his throat. Funny, they already have. My eyes fly open in shock. He nods, looking pleased with himself. Governor Well facilitated a meeting with one of their top ministers. He has contacts in the north and is easily persuaded. Probably because you hold his daughter hostage. Probably, he agrees. So that's what this tour is, a solidifying of power, the creation of a new alliance, a twisting of arms and bending of wills by whatever means necessary. I knew it was for something other than spectacle, but this I could not fathom. I think of Farley, the colonel, their Lakelander soldiers pledged to the Scarlet Guard. What will a truce do to them? Don't look so glum. I'm ending a war millions died for, and bringing peace to a country that no longer knows the meaning of the word. You should be proud of me. You should be thanking me. Don't... He puts his hands up in defense as I spit at him. You really need to figure out another way to express your anger, he grumbles, wiping at his uniform. Take off my manacles and I'll show you one. He barks out a laugh. Yes, of course, Miss Barrow. Outside, the sky darkens and the world fades to gray. I put a palm to the glass, willing myself to fall through. Nothing happens. I'm still here. I must say I am surprised, he adds. We have far more in common with the Lakelands than you think. My jaw tightens, and I speak through gritted teeth. You both use reds as slaves and cannon fodder. He sits up so quickly I flinch. We both want to end the Scarlet Guard. It's almost comical. Every step I take explodes in my face. I tried to save Killorn from conscription and maimed my sister instead. I became a maid to help my family and within hours became a prisoner. I believed Maven's words and Maven's false heart. I trusted Cal to choose me. I raided a prison to free people and ended up clutching Shade's corpse. I sacrificed myself to save the people I love. I gave Maven a weapon, and now, try as I might to thwart his reign from the inside, I think I've done something much worse. What will a united Lakelands and Norta look like? Despite what Maven said, we head to Rakosta anyway, barreling on after more coronation stops throughout the Westlakes region. We won't stay. Either there isn't a stately home suitable enough for Maven's court, or he simply doesn't want to be there.
I can see why. Rakosta is a military city. Not a fortress like Corvium, but built to support the army all the same. An ugly thing, formed for function. The city sits several miles off the banks of Lake Tarion, and the Iron Road runs through its heart. It bisects Rakosta like a blade, separating the wealthier silver sector of the city from the red. With no walls to speak of, the city creeps up on me. The shadows of houses and buildings appear out of the white blindness of a blizzard. Silver storms work to keep our road clear, battling the weather to keep the king on schedule. They stand on top of our transports, directing the snow and ice around us with even motions. Without them, the weather would be much worse, a hammer of brutal winter. Still, snow blasts against the windows of my transport, obscuring the world outside. There are no more windweavers from the talented House Laris. They're either dead or gone, having fled with the other rebelling houses, and the silvers remaining can only do so much. From what little I can see, Rakosta carries on despite the storm. Red workers move to and fro, clutching at lanterns, their lights bobbing through the haze like fish in murky water. They're used to this kind of weather so close to the lakes. I settle down into my long coat, glad for the warmth, even if the coat is a blood-red monstrosity. I glance at the Arvins, still clad in their usual white. "Are you scared?" I chatter to the empty air. I don't wait for their non-existent response, all of them quietly focused on ignoring my voice. "We could lose you in a storm like this." I sigh to myself, crossing my arms. Wishful thinking. Maven's transport rolls ahead of mine, spotted with sentinel guards. Like my coat, they stand out sharply in the snowstorm, their flaming robes a beacon to the rest of us. I'm surprised they don't take off their masks despite the low visibility. They must revel in looking inhuman and frightening. Monsters to defend another monster. Our convoy turns off the Iron Road somewhere near the center of the city, speeding down a wide avenue crisscrossed with twinkling lights. Opulent townhouses and walled city manors rise up from the street, their windows warm and inviting. Up ahead, a clock tower fades in and out of visibility, occasionally obscured by drifting gusts of snow. It tolls 3 o'clock as we approach, gonging peals of sound that seem to reverberate inside my ribcage. Dark shadows plunge along the street, deepening with every passing second as the storm gets stronger. We're in the silver sector, evidenced by the lack of trash and bedraggled reds roaming the alleys. Enemy territory. As if I'm not already as deeply behind enemy lines as possible. At court, there were rumors about Rakosta and Cal in particular. A few soldiers had received a tip that he was in the city, or some old man had thought he'd seen him and wanted rations in exchange for the information. But the same could be said of so many places. He'd be stupid to come here, to a city still firmly under Maven's control, especially with Corvium so close by. If he's smart, he is far away, well hidden, helping the Scarlet Guard as best he can. Strange to think that House Laris, House Eral, and House Haven rebelled in his honor for an exiled prince who will never claim the throne. What a waste. The administrative building beneath the clock tower is ornate compared to the rest of Rakosta, more akin to the columns and crystal of Whitefire Palace. Our convoy glides to a halt before it, spitting us out into the snow. I hustle up the steps as quickly as I can, drawing up the infuriating red collar against the cold. Inside, I expect warmth and a waiting audience to hang on Maven's every calculated word. Instead, we find chaos. This was once a grand meeting hall. The walls are lined with plush benches and seating, now pushed aside. Most have been stacked on top of one another, cleared to make room on the main floor. I'm seized by the scent of blood. A strange thing for a hall full of silvers. But then I see. It is not so much a hall as a hospital. All the wounded are officers, laid out on cots in neat rows. I count 3 dozen at a glance. Their liveried uniforms and neat medals mark them as military of varying ranks, with insignia from any number of high houses. Skin healers attend as fast as they can, but only two are on duty, marked by the red and silver crosses